Folks, those of you just tuning in, this is Dennis Quattlebaum from Atlanta, Georgia, coming to you via Baltimore this evening. Been up here on meetings for a couple of days, and thought I'd spend some time with you guys from here this evening instead of trying to hump it back to Atlanta. So if you're waiting on the call for Q&A or Ron interviews an expert, that you'd be in the right place. We're going to get this thing going here in about 2 minutes, so grab you a pen and paper. You're going to take lots and lots and lots of good notes this evening. Get this thing going in about 2 minutes.
Dennis, I am here.
All right.
And I understand you're under snow up there.
I tell you what, for a Georgia boy, it is a little bit odd. I believe them when they say they got snow that's about chest high, but I've got a picture of me with it. No kidding. I'm not a little fella, and it's chest high. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, that's a reminder why we live in the South, sir.
Yeah. You know, contrast that with we got 3 inches of snow Friday night in Atlanta, and it was gone by noon on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And provided us, you know, with a little bit of snowman making ability there for a couple hours before it all went away.
I bet your kids loved that, didn't they?
Oh, my. Well, yeah, I got 4 of them under 8 or under 9, and got one with a birthday here next month. And the 2 youngest ones have never even seen snow. So that was a real treat. My 2-year-old didn't really know what to think about it. She'd just soon look at it from the inside.
I agree with her.
Yeah, I said, baby, don't you want to go out there and throw a snowball? Nope. I stay here. Well, Ron, I've got 7 o'clock Eastern time, and that's what time we promised we'd get this thing going. I know you got tons and tons and tons of information, so.
I do.
Why don't we, for fear of running short this evening, why don't I just skip the announcements? You all right with that?
Well, I'm okay with it, but you, Dennis, you've got an awful lot of folks on the call tonight that are not Financial Freedom Network members, and we are going to have a full call tonight. So you probably ought to tell them a little bit about what financial freedom is, and then you can come back to that later on when I'm through and we take some questions here. And, guys,
all right.
we are going to take questions at the end of the call. We have an operator standing by, and the operator, if you will get in the queue there, the operator will take your call. Dennis, how do they get in the queue?
Candace is our operator this evening. I've already spoken with her, and she's an old veteran with you and I, so she knows how this works. *0, folks, will place you into the queue when you have a question. Ron won't be taking questions but toward the end of the call, so if you'd like to queue up now, I guess I'd be fine. Candace, it causes Candace a little bit of a pickle, but if you think you got a question now, if you'd rather wait till further into the call and Ron, if something that Ron says sparks a question, you can certainly hit that, and we'll take them in the order in which they called in. She'll insert you into the call. You will be able to hear what's going on the live call while you're in the queue. If you press it at *0 twice, it does act as a toggle switch. It will pull you out the second time. You will lose your spot, and she won't be able to put you back up in there. So that's kind of how that part works.
Guys, I'm going to tell you, if you're ever going to have questions, it's going to be from tonight's call. So if we can't get them all, and I know we will not get them all through the queue in Candace, then email them to Dennis, and if he doesn't have the answers, he can send them to me, and we'll respond to you by email, because this is a very important subject we're going to talk about tonight. It's all about work for equity. And I'm going to go through what that means and some do's and some don'ts, and we're going to play with some numbers and so forth. And then I am going to reserve some time at the end so that you can get as many of them in as you can before our 90-minute deadline is up. So, Dennis, do you have some announcements that you want to get through before we get started?
Well, I tell you, why don't I – just housekeeping stuff. You know, folks, if you're a Financial Freedom Network member, you know, we had a great call this afternoon. You heard me say before that I'm traveling up here in Baltimore, been with Bill Glazer for the last couple of days, you know, trying to get a little smarter myself. And Dan Duran was gracious enough to sit in on the call for me today and on Open Line Tuesday. If you missed that call, I've already gotten received several emails you know, talking about how great that call was. I know Ron, he was talking a lot about his free and clear type aspect of the business. business, how to approach these people, that kind of thing. So if you remember, my staff has told me that that thing is going to be posted on your intranet here. It could be as early as the next couple of hours, and you can go up there and download that. It'll certainly be posted by tomorrow morning, so you might want to watch for that. It was a super special call. Don't forget, next Tuesday is Technology Tuesday with Tim Yandel, Ron and I's technology partner in Financial Freedom Network. So let's go ahead and put that on your calendar. Followed quickly up by the first Tuesday night of the month, it'll be Ron and Dennis again on the phone, but it's a completely different call. The structure is completely different. That is the one time a month that you can tune in and ask Ron any question that you like. Tonight, we're really going to want to keep the questions on the work for equity subject, so we can, that's what people have tuned in to hear. But the first Tuesday night of every single month, we put Ron on the end of the line, and no questions are off limits. And in true Ron fashion, he gets those things handled. Sometimes we have some lulls in the calls, so don't be thinking that, it's like calling a radio station, you'll never get through. I think you'd be surprised. So that's 2 weeks from tonight. So it'll be the first Tuesday night of March, as it is every first Tuesday night of the month, and has been, Ron, since the last 7 years we've been doing that call?
Yep, 7 years Financial Freedom Network has been in existence. Actually, 7.5 now.
Yep, sure enough. Yep. And guys, if you're tuning in tonight and you don't know what Financial Freedom Network is, we're doing this call, and wonder why in the world we're even talking about it. We're doing this call in the spot that we traditionally do on the third Tuesday night of every month. We do have a system. For those of you who've been around long enough, you certainly know all of our calls happen on Tuesdays, and this takes place in the Ron Interviews and Experts spot. We're going to turn the tables a little bit this evening, I'll be bouncing some questions off of Ron. Ron certainly got some of his stuff that he wants to get through here, and that'll get us through tonight's call. With Financial Freedom Network, you get a couple of websites, one to buy houses on, one to sell houses on. If you can't tell, we do lots and lots of conference calls. The availability to be able to ask a question of a live human being that really knows what they're doing is very, very high in Financial Freedom Network, or as we call it, FFN. We have electronic hotlines and so forth as well. We have a password-protected members-only site that is loaded up with forms. As a matter of fact, the work for equity that Ron's going to be talking about this evening, the form that Ron, what'd you pay for that thing, Ron? About $6,000?
Mm-hmm.
So Ron paid $6,000 for this thing, as well as several of the other high-dollar forms up there. These are tried, true, tested forms. They're the forms that I use, and I pull it right off my intranet every time that I want to use it. It is not modified because it suits my needs. And so we got on the password-protected site, you are going to see tons and tons of support information like that. So what did I leave out, Ron? I know I could go on for a long time.
If you want to learn more about Financial Freedom Network, then you just go to gofn.com, and you can do that while I'm talking if you want to, as long as you don't get off of the call here, and explore around. And Dennis will come back to that later and make you an offer you can't refuse if you want to join that. Any of the folks that are on here are members. Some aren't, because we invited some of our folks in our database at Global Publishing who don't know what FFN even is. So I thought this would be an important call tonight, so I'm breaking the rules and I'm letting everybody in that's in our customer base. And I think that's it for now, Dennis. We'll talk more on that later. Let's get going so I can make sure I get all this stuff in, and then reserve some time for some questions, shall we?
Let's go.
All right.
I'm excited about it.
All right. The subject tonight is work for equity, and it's aptly titled because that's exactly what it is. We're not doing the work for the equity. Our buyers are doing the work for equity, but I don't know where the term came from, but it's, when I started, I don't even know what year I started doing this, but it was a long time ago, and that was the term we were using back then. It seems also that the public, for by and large, knows what that term means, or think they know what it means. So let me start off by defining exactly what it is. And in simplistic terms, it is when we put a tenant buyer into a home as is and let them do the work with their money and their labor instead of us hiring a contractor to do the work on the property. It's called work for equity because we sell it to them cheaper than what we would sell it for after it's renovated. The good news is that not much cheaper. Normally, when I put a tenant buyer in a house that intends to live in it, I'll price it somewhere around 90% of the after-repaired value, but I'm selling it as is, where is. And there's a whole subculture of folks out there who are interested in these type of properties because they can move in immediately while doing the work while they live in it, in most cases, and then ultimately get qualified for a loan on the back end and buy the house after they've done the work with their hands and paid for the materials and established a record of being in the house and making the payments on it. Now, the advantages to the Work for Equity program to you are very good and worth noting. And incidentally, if you do not have a pencil and paper to write on and with today, you need to get one. Get it by your side right now because I'm going to be throwing some numbers at you pretty soon, and you're going to get lost in them if you don't get something to write it down on. Now, if you're driving down the highway right now, that's probably not a good idea. All right, here's some advantages. You do no repairs, and I mean no repairs. You don't repair them before you put the tenant buyer in, during, or after. That means no calls to you that the plumbing is stopped up or that the roof is leaking or anything else for that matter. When I put a tenant buyer in a house, it's crystal clear. If it's a broke, you call a plumber. Don't call a me. I'm not the guy. And that is a condition of their option. I'm giving them the right to buy the property because they're agreeing to do the repairs. And that's another reason why that lease option agreement that Dennis mentioned earlier is so critical in the Work for Equity process. I'll come back to that later. Another thing I like is, they don't call me after the sale is closed. If you're in the rehabbing business, you'll almost always get a call after the deal is closed because something is broke. I mean, look, you didn't live in the house. You didn't know the drain was plugged up. And so you don't know this stuff till somebody lives in the house and then finds it out and calls you. And if that happens, you got to fix it. I mean, let's face it. You can't sell somebody a house that's supposed to be in excellent shape and then not go back out and replace their hot water heater when they find out that it really should have been replaced. So you don't have to deal with that with Work for Equity because, again, that is their responsibility in writing. Fast sale. The beautiful thing about this Work for Equity program is, since I don't have any contractor to hire or any costly entanglements involved in the rehab process, I can literally sell the property the same day I close the purchase of it. And, in fact, that is my perfect ideal exit plan, is to close the purchase and the sale the same day. If you build a buyer's list of the people who are looking for Work for Equity properties, that should not be hard. Because if you'll think about it, you've got at least 30 days to close when you buy. That means you have 30 days to find the tenant buyer to put in the house before you even close. If you're going to close on it, it means you're going to probably borrow private money on it to close on it, just as you would if you rehabbed it. But now, same afternoon, you have the tenant buyer waiting to take over the property immediately on probably a lease purchase, or in some cases, we sell them with owner financing in some states. You make more money, and I'm going to prove that to you in a minute. You're going to make more money, and you're going to do a whole lot less work. And in addition to that, you're going to pay at least half the taxes, less than half the taxes that you will pay if you renovate it and sell it to a qualified couple. There are no delays, you're in, you're out, and even if you don't sell it the same day you buy it, you won't have it very long before you're going to find a tenant buyer, most likely, who wants to lease option it in its present condition. And I'll also mention that in today's marketplace, guys and gals, present condition is really not all that bad. I mean, I can't tell you how many houses that we've bought here in the past year or two where, gosh, the renovation wasn't over $10,000 on the house, and that's us hiring a contractor and spoofing it up and doing all that fancy stuff. I think the highest price renovation that I've done here so far this whole last year was $15,000, and I did a lot of work for that. And I did four or five renovations myself here in the last half of last year. I mean, not myself. God forbid I didn't touch the house. In fact, I haven't even seen them after they're renovated, but I've seen pictures of them. And the point is that your tenant buyer, your Work for Equity tenant buyer, is not going to fix them like you would fix them. So you need to keep that in mind. If I'd spend $10,000 to fix a house, to them, that looks like maybe $2,000, because all they've got to do is buy materials. They're going to probably use their own labor or their relative's labor. So they look at it differently than I look at it. So if I'm going to put somebody in a house and I'm going to sell it to them for, I don't know, let's say it's a $125,000 house, and I'm going to probably put them in there for about $115,000. So to them, they're getting some equity and a couple of thousand dollars worth of materials over a period of months that they can take to pay for it, and they'll have the house fixed up. They're not going to fix it like I'd fix it. You know, I might put new countertops in it. They might keep the old ones. I might paint the house because I don't like the color. They might be all right with it. I might replace the carpet. They might clean it, you know, and all those things. But we are going to create a list of repairs that we know that the lender is going to require before they can get a new loan and cash out. And we'll come back to that. But that list that you would normally have done is probably not going to match the list that they'll do if left to their own devices to do whatever they want. They're going to do whatever the least they can do to make it livable for themselves to get qualified for a loan. And we're going to have that discussion up front. So we have no delays. Hopefully we're in and out. And we don't have any need. We can also do these on the subject to deals that we take over subject to. I'm going to come back to an example in a few minutes, but quite often you'll find properties where people will gladly have you come over and take over the debt, but they need repairs on it, and now you're kind of stuck. Well, where am I going to get the money to do these repairs? Because I'm going to have a hard time getting a private lender to put a second mortgage on this house to raise the cash. So I don't want to write a check. So, hey, this work for equity is an excellent exit strategy for all of those subject to deals that you take over that need work on them. You just take over the debt, sell them as is, where is, to your new buyer, and let them worry about the repairs, and then you don't have any money in the deal. So there's a lot of advantages to this, and there are a couple of disadvantages, such as you do not get all of your money now. As you'll see in a minute, you know you will get money along the way. You can sustain life. There's cash coming out of this property long before you get cashed out, but you do not get paid all of it up front. However, many times you will see that the amount you get out of these projects up front is equal to or greater than the amount you'd get out of a rehab waiting 3 or 4 or 5 months to get it. So it's not like you're going to do without cash, but you will are in the landlord business. You will have tenants, and there will be months go by between the time that you put the tenant buyer in the house and they close, and sometimes they will move. And in fact, probably 50% of the time or more, your tenant buyer will not close on the house, so you'll have to put another tenant buyer in there right behind them, get another deposit, and let them do whatever work hasn't already been done to the property. And I can tell you right now, this does not work well on the higher-end houses. This whole campaign is focused more on your lower-end houses, and where most of you live listening to this call tonight, that is somewhere between the houses that would retail in excellent condition from between $80,000 on up to a couple of $100,000. When you get above that, you're pushing the edges of where people really don't want to do work on the property in exchange for equity. So the disadvantage here is that you are dealing with the lower end of your market. Therefore, you're also dealing with a large percentage of the market that does not have good credit. However, many of them are creditworthy enough to the point to where, given a little time and given a little work on their credit, especially coupled with the fact that they're doing the work with their own hands and they're coming up with the money to buy the materials, turns what normally would be a C-minus buyer into a B-minus buyer or a B-plus buyer, because we've helped them build a track record while cleaning up their credit. So if we're in the work for equity business, I don't want anybody to be under the illusion that we're going to have all these people with these high credit scores and these down payments coming in looking for these work for equity projects. Guys, if they have a high credit score and a down payment, they don't want to do the work. They're going to go find the pretty houses that they can just move into and close on. Like I'm closing one on Friday like that, Dennis, where, you know, I bought it for 42.5 in an auction, put about 9 in it, and we're selling it for $98,000, closing on it this Friday to a qualified couple. So, but that's not work for equity. We did the work.
Hey, would it, you know, most of the time if somebody's got a high credit score and you know, I'm putting it out there on work for equity, you know, my joke is they usually had the wrong number. last month I landed one where the wife's credit score, no kidding, was 780.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know they had credit scores that high.
Yeah, 780, and I was surprised. I'm like, I don't need to know anything else.
Yeah.
You know, basically, so, and the husband was a contractor. His was a little bit lower.
Oh, that's perfect. They are perfect.
And then, on top of that, this is the best. You know I love this time of year because tax refunds.
Yep, coming back. Yep.
And so, I got people using it for that. Then on top of that, you got the $8,000 first-time homebuyer thing, which we had to modify the agreement so that they would qualify. And the house needed so much work that they negotiated where they get to keep 4 of that and I get to keep 4. So, it was a pretty interesting transaction.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, there's tons of folks out there. The market is full of folks, and, I'm not going to be – you're going to find them in the sevens very often, but you don't need to because, see, the truth is...
That was an anomaly. I'll admit that was definitely an anomaly.
The truth is, if you have one of these credit repair agencies help these folks get their credit cleaned up, God, you can raise someone's credit to score 150 points in a year.
Sure.
All right. The objective. Our objective is to put the tenant buyer in the house, as is, at about 90% of retail, give or take. Now, that number's going to fluctuate, guys. Don't write down 90% and said, Ron said this is what I should sell it for. You got to use a little bit of common sense here. If the house, frankly, the uglier the house is, the lower percentage of the ARV you're going to wind up selling it for. The more work it's got to be done, the more equity you got to give up. It's just as simple. And just for the record, I've actually sold condemned houses on work for equity. Now, the downside is you got to sell them a lot cheaper, and, of course, the tenant buyer cannot live in the house until they get the work done and get it certified, but that doesn't stop me from getting rent out of them, because make no mistake about it, when I put a work-for-equity tenant buyer in a house, they pay rent from day one. Nobody, and I mean nobody, is getting into a house that I own if they're not paying rent and they haven't given me some money up front as a commitment to get in the house, but I'm going to come back to that here in a little bit. So I'm looking for people who want equity in exchange for an easy house to buy. So guys, don't forget that I'm making it easy for them to buy. I'm putting them in this house on a lease purchase, as is, and making it crystal clear that the house needs some work. In fact, that's right in our advertising. They're not going to go to the house and it's a surprise that it needs work. And I'm going to sell it to them cheap. Just their definition of cheap and mine's probably not the same. And frankly, I'm selling it to them at top retail price since the work is not done. They do the work, and they buy the materials. And then later, we get them qualified for a loan. Now, I'm not going to have time to go into great detail on that tonight, but frankly, you can run your business any way you want to run it. For example, if you want them to get qualified and cash you out, then you will have a system in place and a mortgage broker in place to help get them to the point to where they get qualified. And maybe you don't care because maybe you don't care if they buy it or not. That's all in the way you run your business. If your cash flow needs are taken care of, maybe the last thing you need is somebody to cash you out of this house when you're paying high income taxes and you'd rather just not turn loose of the house. Don't forget that you got people in these houses and you are never going to get a repair bill. And that really takes landlording to the next level. And when you don't have to worry about doing any of the repairs, you don't have all the grief that comes along with landlording. And that's the kind of tenant buyer you got in these properties. So who's the target? All right, if you're taking notes, write these down because these are my target prospects. I'm looking for people with weak credit but good income. Remember, they have to have enough income to support the future loan when they do get it closed and to support the current rent. So I don't really care. Even if they got good credit and they can't show me enough income to support a loan, I don't think I want them in the house. Frankly, I'd rather have high income and poor credit than good income or good credit and weak income. It's the income that's going to get them qualified. The credit we can fix. Plus, it's the income that's going to get them to pay the rent. And even if they never do buy, I want that rent along the way, and I don't want to have to, that to be an obstacle. So I'm not going to put someone in the house and set them up to fail. I'm going to rent it to them cheap, but still I want my rent. Secondly, they must have some money down. And, again, they're not getting in my house without some money. And I'm going to tell you right now, one of the biggest hurdles you're going to run across in the beginning until you build your buyer's machine is you're going to attract a lot of people that would love for you to put them in the house and let them pay you later. Oh, and the stories they have. Oh, put me in the house. I'll fix it up while I live in there. Not a problem. My brother-in-law is a contractor, and, you know, I'll buy the materials and all that, but I don't have any money now. Guys, that's an absolute no-no. If you don't get a commitment from them with some cash up front, and I'll come back to that in a minute, and the willingness to make the monthly payment starting the day you get hand them the keys, they are not a prospect. So crystal clear here. You don't get any money, they don't get your house.
Hey, and Ron, you know, I know you've beat that one up, but that is the first thing out of their mouth is, hey, your house needs work, like I didn't know that when I sent them out there. And it makes real good sense in their head that they're improving the house and they're going to need money to do so, but you got to stand firm. You're going to miss some of the first ones, but you really didn't miss anything.
No, you didn't. All you missed was a problem you don't have to clean up later.
Absolutely.
Guys, now I'm not talking about a lot of money. We're not going to put somebody in a $125,000 house and expect them to bring $10,000 to the table. That ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen with a pretty house. So we're going to get realistic here, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute. And the third qualification is they must have the wherewithal to do the work. Now, that does not mean that they have to be a handy person, but it does mean that they have to know one and probably related to them. If they cannot convince me that they can get the job done and that they can buy the materials along the way, then I can't put them in the house because I'm just setting them up for fail, and I know they are not going to get the work done and they're not going to get qualified. You see, most of these houses that you're putting them in, if they don't get the work, they can't get the loan because some of the things they got to fix will stop the lender from making the loan. And I'll try to get back to that in just a second here. And then fourth, I want them to really want to buy. If they don't want to buy, I don't want them in my house. I'm looking for attitude. I want people who want to move in the house. They want to fix it. They think they can. They know they can get the money over time. Even in my example of $2,000 or $3,000 worth of work, they don't have to have that money right now. I expect them to take several months and over that period of time buy those materials. And I am going to create not only a list of what to do, and again, I'm only going to come right down to the bare basics, so let me cover that now. I want them to do anything that would stop the city from approving the deal if they were to come out and inspect it. The same things that your city inspector looks for, I'm going to be looking for, because so is your appraiser when he's appraising it for the bank. For example, we cannot have any rotten wood on the house. If we have rotten wood, it's got to be replaced. We cannot have any broken glass. We cannot have any peeling paint. We cannot have any heating or plumbing that does not work, or electrical. All electrical, plumbing, and heating in the house has to work. And what am I missing, Dennis? I know there's some other stuff. What is the lender's going to nix?
The hot water is going to have to...
Hot water's got to work, right?
It's got to work. The exhaust vents, we've seen a problem with drier exhaust vents here lately for whatever reason.
Yeah.
If something I've encountered here lately is dead trees. You know, didn't think about it. But that evidently is a big deal in my area. But it doesn't affect the livability of the house 99% of the time.
Okay. So all that stuff's got to work. Now, again, doesn't mean I'm going to make it work, but it means that I know it needs to work before they can close the loan, so I'm going to put this stuff on the list. And other than that, for example, carpet. I don't care if they replace the carpet. If they're okay with it like it is, I'm okay with it like it is, because truthfully, folks, you're not going to get any more for new carpet than you do old carpet on an appraisal anyway. So what do you care? I don't care if they paint I don't care if the walls are purple. If they like them purple, let them leave them purple. Doesn't matter. It doesn't hurt me a bit. And I don't even care if the outside of the house really should be painted, but they like the color, let them keep the color. It's entirely up to them. But roof, of course, is one. If it needs a new roof, then it's got to have a new roof before it's going to qualify for the loan. And if it's got termites, termites have got to be treated before it's going to qualify for a loan. So you're not going to be around long to where you're going to know what these things are. So you just simply create this list, and if you're a little concerned, then you can put at the bottom of the list anything else the lender requires to get the loan approved. That's always the catch-all. So now you've got a list. And now you sit here and you ask the person, okay, how long is it going to take you to get this done? They say, oh, I can probably get this work done in about 3 months. All right, well, great. I'm going to give you six. You got 6 months to get the work done, and along the way, we'll start working on getting your credit cleaned up. And guys, just so you know, if you give them six, they may or may not get it done in the six. So I want you to understand that whatever they tell you is probably not going to work out the way they say it, so don't get shocked if that's the case. The truth is, I don't really care because I expect them to take a full year. I expect them to take a full year to get the work done and to get them qualified for a loan, and sometimes it just takes that long to get their credit cleaned up. And if you hold on to that property for the year, please don't forget that you're in a 15% capital gain tax bracket. So literally you've cut your taxes in half. So when they do cash you out, that's a pretty important thing, and especially if you're doing a lot of these things. 15% versus 35%. So if you hold it a year, you hold it a year. So let's get to the numbers, and then we'll see why that should not be a big issue for you. So this is where you're going to need a pencil and paper, guys. And I want you to write these numbers down as I tell them to you so you'll have them in front of you, because I'm telling you, you're going to get lost here if you don't. I mean, this is not a webinar, so I can't display them. Hold on here just a second. Let me take a water break, and I'll be right back. All right. Here's an example. Let's start at the top of your page and just write these numbers down in a column format as I go through them. Let's say that we have a house here with $125,000 ARV. ARV stands for after repaired value for all you folks who are brand new to the call. This is assuming that we renovated it and it was excellent condition. So start top of your column with $125,000. Next, let's assume that it would take $10,000 for us to hire somebody to fix it. Just put that underneath there as well for reference. Now, on this house, let's say we paid $50,000 for it. So write on down your column, but down there, cost $50,000. And guys, I can tell you, you can buy $125,000 houses that need $10,000 worth of work for $50,000 all over the country anytime you want them. Now, since we know we're going to close on this, and we need $50,000 to close it, and since if you've been trained by Ron, you always know to borrow more than you need, we're going to go borrow $70,000. So put loan, private loan, $70,000, right on down your column. So we're going to borrow $70,000 to buy a house that we're paying $50,000 for. And beside the $70,000, you could put 56% LTV. That's a 56% loan-to-value ratio. So that makes it a very safe loan for your private lender. If I'm borrowing this money, I'm going to be borrowing it at 7% interest, accruing interest, which means the lender will get a note and mortgage or a deed of trust for $70,000. This is in first position, and the note will say 7% interest accruing. And then there will probably be a balloon on it of 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever you negotiate. And that simply means that the $70,000 will sit there, and let's say it takes exactly 1 year to pay them off. Well, at the end of that year, I will owe $70,000 principal plus 7% of $70,000 for that first year. So I'll owe $4,900 in interest and $70,000 in principal. But for right now, just put we're going to borrow $70,000 to buy this house. So that means that the net from that loan is $20,000. So I want everybody to understand, the day I close the purchase, I'm coming home with a check for $20,000 less whatever closing costs I agreed to pay. Now, since I'm borrowing this $70,000 from a private individual, I shouldn't be paying any points or any of that junk, and that's where I want you to borrow it from, is from private individuals. But if you have to go get it through a mortgage broker and they charge you points, then so be it until you learn how to ask for money yourself from private individuals. Now, I'm going to bring home that $20,000 the day I purchased. It's the same day I'm going to close the loan. It's all closed simultaneously. And if I have my buyer sitting there waiting, then I'm going to go ahead and have my attorney close the tenant buyer or, you know, the lease option that same afternoon, right after I close the purchase. So let's move on down the column. And now let's say I sell this property on a lease purchase for $115,000 as is, and I choose to rent it out for $600 per month in rent. I get a $2,000 deposit right on down the line from my tenant buyer. And guys, on a $115,000 house, a $2,000 deposit when the house needs work is about all you can expect. So let's don't have crazy expectations. Sometimes you're going to get more. Sometimes you're going to get less. But remember, this is a deposit. It's a non-refundable option deposit, plus I want $600 rent. If I do not get $2,600 from that person in cash, that person does not get my keys. And I don't know how much more adamant I can be about that. No money, no keys. Do not violate that rule. By the way, how do you think I learned that rule, Dennis?
Yeah. How do I know that?
Yeah. Bet you. I can't tell you how many stories I listen to and how many times I put people in houses because of their great story, and not one of them ever worked out. If you do not get their money, you do not give them access to your house. No story is good enough.
Hey, if they don't walk away with anything else from this call, and their landlord, and they're governing their landlord business with their heart, and they're not listening to two heartless guys. You know, we actually both have big hearts.
Well, no, we don't. No, we don't. I don't have any heart anymore.
You don't let your show very often, and you try to hide it. But you know, those of us who know better. But reality is, you're not helping their situation whatsoever. Because every single time, I'm going to end up in court or filing something. We're going to end up at odds.
Yep.
And it's never going to be their fault. It's just not going to turn out well.
You got a totally different mindset when they give you their cash than when they don't. All right, let's move on then. So your column should say $115,000 sales price, and I say that lightly because we haven't sold it. We're just lease optioning it today. $2,000 deposit, so they still owe me $113,000. Put on there, do you, $113,000. Now let's say that our whatever months have gone by, years gone by or whatever, and now they're ready to go get a new loan and cash me out for the $113,000. Okay. When that $113,000 comes to the closing table, I got to pay off my underlying debt, which is $74,900. Remember, $70,000 principal plus $4,900 in interest, since we're using a one-year exact example here. So out of the $113,000, put $74,900 below that and put a minus sign beside it. That leaves $38,100 net proceeds the day you close out the transaction, less your closing costs, whatever they may be. So you're $38,100. However, is that all the money we made? No, it is not all the money we made. So let's carry the column right on down. Remember when I put the tenant buyer in the house, they gave me a $2,000 deposit plus $600 a month rent. But let's put $2,000 deposit there right now. So that's a plus sign. And don't forget that when I borrowed the $70,000 loan the day I bought the house, that $20,000 of it came home with me the day I bought the house. So put plus $20,000 more down there in our profit column. Now don't forget that they paid me $600 a month rent for the last 12 months. So I've got $7,200 more than I can add to my profit column. I'm at $67,300 in my net column right there, less whatever closing costs that I decided that I had to pay. So I got $22,000 of it up front, $20,000 from the loan and $2,000 from my tenant buyer, $600 a month, and $38,100 on the back end. So my cash flow needs up front were taken care of. My monthly needs were taken care of, and I might remind you, when you do a rehab job, how much does your tenant that you don't have in the house pay you per month? The answer is none. And I also might remind you, when you do a rehab job, how much money do you get up front the day you buy it? And the answer is none. So, but I got paid $22,000 up front, and now I'm getting $38,100 in the back. So far, I'm at $67,300. Now, let's just carry that on down. In fact, if you want to, if you want to put a column beside that, you can, or below it, whatever you whatever you got room for. Let's just do this same deal on a rehab. We bought the same house. We spent the $10,000 to repair it, and now we're rehabbing it, and we've sold it to a qualified buyer, and they're closing on it like I'm closing on one Friday. Let's start a column here, and let's do the numbers all over again. We're selling it for $125,000 because we've renovated it. We've still paid $50,000 for it, so put minus $50,000. We paid $10,000 in repairs, so put a minus $10,000 below that. And we've held it at least 6 months, so we've got 6 months' worth of interest that we're going to have to put down there on below that. And I promise you, by the time you buy and hold and sell a $125,000 house, you're going to have at least 10% of that sales price go away in sales cost, holding costs, miscellaneous costs, and hedge factor. And if you don't believe it, you haven't done one yet. But for the sake of now, let's put a minus $12,500 down there. So our column looks like $125,000, minus $50,000, minus $10,000, minus $3,700, minus $12,500, and we have a net of $48,800. So we netted $48,800 on our rehab deal, and we netted $67,300 on our non-rehab deal. So we actually got paid to not rehab the house. But now let's take a look at our after-tax situation here. If I'm holding the house for a year because it takes my tenant buyer that long for me to take them out on the with a qualifying them on a loan, that means I'm in long-term capital gains, so I am a 15% tax. 15% of $67,300 leaves me an after-tax profit of $57,200. So make a note, on my work for equity deal, after Uncle Sam and I are squared up, I still got $57,000 left on a house that I only sold for $115,000. Go down here to my buy, fix them up, and retail them now situation. I got $48,800 out of the deal when the loan closed, but I had to give 35% of it to Uncle Sam. And you say, well, whoa, Ron, I'm not in the 35% tax bracket. Then I say, well, that's just because you haven't made any money yet. Wait till you start closing on these deals. You'll be in the 35% tax bracket real quickly because it does not take much of an income to put you in the 35% bracket. So if you have to pay 35% tax on $48,800, your net after tax is only $31,720. So you make $31,720 doing it the old-fashioned rehabbing way, probably 6 months after you bought it, or you made $57,205 doing it the Ron's work for equity way, get paid immediately along the way and some later. So I'm going to let you take a look at the numbers you've written down on your page and ask yourself, which is better? You still awake there, Dennis?
Yeah. Well, you know, and when you start going through numbers, and when I was even coming up as a student, you know, sitting in boot camps and so forth, and let's say you're off by half. I mean, yeah. It still works.
Yeah.
It still works.
Well, you know, the one of the key factors here is, though, forget the dollars and cents. The truth is I can do four or five of these work for equity deals in the same amount of time I'm doing one of them rehab deals because I've taken away all the grief. I don't have the contractor to worry about. I don't have the costly delays. I don't have to hire a contractor. Then I don't have to clean up after them. And then I don't have to find somebody else to fix it after they didn't fix it right. Then I don't have to argue with them about getting the repairs done that wasn't on the list or any of that junk. So it's a beautiful thing. I've totally eliminated contractors, totally out of my life. And not to mention that, when this buyer goes out and gets this loan, sometimes they go get it themselves, and I'm not even involved in it, nor have to worry about it. Sometimes they go clean up their own credit. Usually you're going to have to help them, but if you structure your business the way yours and mine would be structured, frankly, you don't care much whether they cash you out or not, so you can be a little bit helpful or not helpful at all, entirely up to you.
Well, this is one of the things that you taught me back in '98 when I was just a student sitting in a boot camp chair just like most everybody on the phone. And, I did a few was successful with them. And then over the years, I don't know if I forgot it, and you know, I don't know if it didn't just cross my mind. But you started talking about this again, you know, or I was alert to it toward the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a house. It was actually the very first house I ever bought. I still own. And I had done a rehab on it several years ago. I made it nice and perfect and so forth. Guy gave me a bunch of money down. You know, he tore it up and he left. Made me mad because he abused it. I mean, it wasn't wear and tear. He just abused it. He was a terrible father. He let his kids run wild in it. I mean, let his dogs run wild. And I understand wear and tear, but when you abuse it, just makes me mad. Because I'd had maybe I'm emotionally attached to it because it was the first house I bought. I don't know, but this one set me off. So I went home, told my wife, Monica, and I showed her pictures. When you said purple walls, I'll have to put pictures up. You know, these walls were pink, and I had not painted them pink. And it just made me so mad. I said, I refuse to spend, and I'm fresh off of two rehabs that I've spent lots of money on, lots of cost overruns, lots of open this wall up, oh, crap, there's a bunch of rot under there, stuff, hidden stuff. In between the two of us, we've done thousands of rehabs. Every time you open a wall, you get a surprise. You don't know everything. We can certainly mitigate and manage some of the the contingencies on rehabs. But this one just struck me. I said, oh, doggone it, I ain't doing nothing to it. I ain't even turning the water on. I ain't doing nothing. We changed the locks so that the people didn't go back in. That's the only thing we did to the house. And I put it up for 30, maybe 45 days, just refusing to do anything. And it took a lot to refuse to do it because I don't know if it's just me or I just want to go make something ugly pretty again, even if I have to write a check to do it. But I know that's...
I understand. You don't forget, I've renovated a few lately. I don't know what came over me.
Well, what I'm saying is it takes a little bit of willpower, especially when you can go write a check.
Yeah.
And you think that you have these visions of grandeur that you're going to get lots and lots of money for them, and you're going to, quote, you know, what I fool myself in is I'm going to optimize my profit. I'm going to make the most that I can possibly make on that house, or so I thought.
You're going to optimize the taxes you pay, too.
Well, yeah, and that one didn't come into play on a lot on this one because I've owned it since 97. And
oh, yeah, okay.
So I just refused to do it, and lo and behold, here it comes. It didn't happen exactly like what you're saying here, but it was really stinking close. You know, and part of it is I didn't have any money to borrow on it because, you know, I've owned it for so long. So I didn't want to go put an existing debt on it or more debt on it. So I just chose to sit around and wait, and people were, you know, they come up and go, well, can you do this and can you do that? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to paint and carpet it. You know, for your $2,000 down. You can go paint and carpet it if you want to give me $2,000 down. And sure enough, the right couple came along, and it wasn't by the textbook. They called about a four-bedroom, three-bath house on a half-acre lot, kind of out in the woods in a nice setting in a cul-de-sac. The people that actually moved into the house, they called on one of my townhomes that was 20 miles closer to town than this one, and half the square footage, a fraction of the bedrooms. And through conversations, I learned he was a contractor. I said, hey, why don't you go up there? It's just being alert to it, knowing that it's out there, having the discipline not to do knee-jerk reaction type stuff.
Well, that's, you know, the key, one of the keys, the big keys, well, it's not only key to work for equity, it's key to this business, period. And that is to have a big buyer's list waiting on these things so that when you find them, you just plug them right into the buyer's list. And you get them fighting over it. You don't. This ain't about going out and finding a buyer. It's about going out and finding a house so you can satisfy this rabbit herd you got. It is about building the buyer's list. And, you know, we're not going to get into that tonight, but we have a system for you now that does all that for you online. And frankly, it's so autopilot now that there's not much for you to do except let the world know that you got these things and drive a little traffic to your website. But let me continue here, Dennis, because that example that I just gave there was from an ugly house that we have to go raise private money to buy. But there's a whole other side of the business out there. And that's, what about all those properties that we're going out and taking subject to? What about all those properties that we get calls on that aren't in foreclosure? Well, maybe a few of them might be on their way, but what about all the so-called pretty houses that aren't so pretty? When you're getting people to call you with houses for sale and or you're calling FSBOs in the newspaper or online, You're always going to find properties that have existing debt on them but need work. And the problem is you don't want to have to write a check to do the work, and you can't borrow the money from private money because maybe the debt's already too high a loan-to-value ratio to even allow you to get a small second, and that's assuming you have private lenders that'll do a small second. So let me give you an example of a very normal subject to type deal here that you'll run across, and if you'll just keep this little different exit strategy in your mind, maybe you'll be attracted to these kind of deals a lot more because you don't have to worry about, well, how am I going to get the money to fix this house? Let's take out another piece of paper and put on the top $200,000 for your ARV. The ARV on this one is $200,000. And now put down below it that the existing loan is $142,000. And our current payment is, say, I don't know, what do you want it to be, $1,100 a month, give or take. So we've got a current debt of $142,000, $1,100 a month, and it needs $15,000 worth of repairs. Now, many of you listening right now know that $15,000 is a lot of repairs on a house. In fact, Dennis, let me tell you what we did to one of my houses for $15,000. This is a little old 1,000-square-foot house that I bought at an auction for $17,500. For $15,000, I put all new vinyl siding on it. I replaced every single window in the house, and I'm talking about frames here, not just glass. We put a new kitchen in it, a new carpet in it, and painted the whole inside of the house, and then a whole bunch of other little small stuff we did to it as well. In addition to that, we had a whole bunch of rotten wood in the walls that we replaced as well. So we did all of that for $15,000. So you can imagine what that house looked like before we renovated it. I wish I had pictures to show you right now of what it looks like after. It's a nice little dollhouse right now. So anyway, $15,000 worth of work is one nasty house. So we got a debt of $142,000, and it needs $15,000 in work, and the seller's willing to give it to us for what's owed on it. So, okay, now we say yes. So we take the property, and we put it right back on the market on a work for equity. This time we'll put it out there for $185,000, knowing that it's worth $200,000 if we do the work, but we don't want to do the work. So we'll let somebody else come in and spend $2,000-$3,000 to get that $15,000 worth of work done and a lot of their own labor, and we'll get $5,000 deposit out of them, which for a $200,000 house is a small deposit. So I'll get $5,000 now. I'll lease option it to them for $185,000. They owe me $180,000 when they go cash out. And obviously, I'm going to get at least as much or more coming in per rent than I'm paying out per rent. So when they go cash me out, they'll bring $180,000 to the closing table. I'll pay off the $142,000 loan underneath, and I'll get a check for $38,000, plus I got $5,000 on the front end. Okay, no, I didn't make a killing on the front end, but think about what I did. I got a free asset. I'm in. I'm out. I haven't touched it. I got over $60,000, $50,000 worth of equity in it, which I'm going to turn into cash later. Plus, I got $5,000 the minute that I plug my tenant buyer into the property, which I hope is the same day I close on it. And incidentally, I'm going to try to get the seller to make the next two or three payments, so I'm going to collect rent that I'm not going to have a payment to make on in addition to my $5,000. And I don't have any long-term costly entanglement. So I'll take all those you can give me. I get a free asset. I don't touch it. I get money out of it shortly, and I get money out of it later, and somebody else is responsible for all of the repairs. How much better does it get than that, man?
Yeah.
All right. Let me go over the rules. So if you guys are taking notes, here's the rules. And Dennis, make a note in case I miss any. Rule number one, make sure you get a financial commitment. We've covered it. Rule number two, never forget rule number one. Rule number three, they must pay rent while they have possession of your house. And guys, that rent needs to be at least enough to cover your interest cost, even though you might not be paying a monthly interest payment. You want to make sure that you have enough money to cover your interest cost, your taxes, and your insurance on this property while they're in it. I like putting people in the house for a low monthly rent. It really helps me entice them to it, but I do want to make sure that my nut is covered with that rent. In other words, I'm not going to take a negative because I have to assume that they're not going to cash me out, and I don't want to take a loss if they don't. And you're saying, well, Ron, what if they move? I'm saying, well, you go back and you put somebody else in the property that's on your list of buyers. If you haven't got a buyer's list built, this is the time to build one. Remember, your new buyer's taking it as is, where is, so you don't have to go fix it up after them.
Well, and them moving is not a bad thing.
Well, no, you get another deposit. Plus, all of the repairs that they've done will stay in the house. Part of your lease option agreement, guys, is that anything they put in the house, they have to leave in the house. There's nothing stopping them from taking, but and some of them will. But normally, if they put a new kitchen in your house, they won't go take your new kitchen. And if they do, you can go after them for it. But, you know, I don't want to get into that. And you just whatever it is, it is. So it's usually in better condition on your second tenant than it was in your first condition. In fact, I've had two houses, Dennis, that I have put five different tenant buyers in there until they finally got cashed out. And every time it was in a little better shape. And every time it gets in a little better shape, I get to raise price a little. So it's not a bad thing, but it is part of the deal.
Hey, let's face it. When it needs work, what more can they really do to the place?
Well, that's it. And you got to make sure that you keep it insured now for fire in case it burns down. And, of course, if you get a call from the fire department that it's burning down, then, you know, it's a good day. that's a good way to sell a house. Let somebody burn it down for you. And I didn't say that.
And you're not suggesting them carrying
around. No, but look, that's the worst case. It burns down. Burns down is why you got insurance. That's simple. Mm-hmm. Okay, next rule. You can't put people in the property, folks, that have zero chance of ever getting a loan under any circumstances. There is good credit, there is bad credit, and there is Prince of Darkness credit. And if they have Prince of Darkness, then you're kidding yourself if you think you're ever going to get them cashed out. So, again, there's only so much you can do to clean up credit. So if you got somebody with a 320 credit score, you're never going to get them to a 620. You won't live long enough. There's a reason they have a 320 credit score, because they're consistent. They don't ever pay anything. So you've got to use a little common sense here. And what I'd do if I were you is that I'd have your mortgage broker, when they pull their credit for you, tell you, is there a chance we're going to get this guy qualified later if we get their credit cleaned up, especially if they have a history of making payments on the house to you and they put their money into the materials. If he feels the answer is yes, then it's a go. If he or she feels the answer is no, then you probably ought to ask yourself, why am I doing this? I'm just creating a problem I got to fix later. Next, they must be able to complete the repairs. And again, you create the list and give them a time frame to get it done. And incidentally, you're not going to evict someone because they don't get the repairs done on time. I have never put anybody out of my house because they didn't complete the repairs, as long as they keep making the rent. As far as I'm concerned, they're going to stay in the house as long as they pay the rent forever, for all I care. But, you know, that's my philosophy. You may feel differently. Your lease option agreement does have a provision in it that says that you can put them out if they don't complete the repairs in any given time. And incidentally, you, as long as you don't put anything in your agreement otherwise, even when their term is up, you can always boot them out. You don't have to have a reason. So you don't ever want to make your option term not too far in the future, because if you give them 3 years to buy it, they're probably going to take 3 years to buy it. If you give them 1 year to buy it, then that's always on their mind, and they're more apt to get the loan process going, and that's exactly what I give most of them, is 1 year. Now, I can't tell you that all of the ones who bought have bought in that year, because I frankly will extend it for another year by them simply asking if they've made their payments to me, and they haven't been a pain in the neck, and they've shown some kind of effort to get the repairs done. Because in my case, again, I don't care. But you could move them certainly at the end of the term if you wanted to. Next. Here we come back to this special work for equity agreement. Now, Dennis, tell them how to get to that agreement. Guys, if you are listening to this and you are an FFN member, you probably already know where to get this agreement. But if you're not an FFN member, Dennis, why don't you tell our listeners how to go get a 30-day free trial for FFN, and during that trial they can drag this agreement off even if they choose not to stay afterwards.
All right. Basically, you go to GoFFN, Financial Freedom Network, what it stands for. So it's Frank Nancy, GoFFN.com. You're going to have a red button staring you in the face. If you want to read through the rest of the stuff, you can. And it's got, you know, we got so many benefits, it's just hard to explain, especially in a short period of time. But, you know, I assure you, it's worth every penny you're paying. You can take my word on it, and if you don't believe me, you can call me on an open line Tuesday and talk to me directly and say that, you know, you didn't believe me and that kind of thing. So, but red button staring you right there in the face on GoFFN.com.
If they're on online. Many of our callers are not online. Yeah.
And if you just want to pick up the phone and call us, it's 800-336-1921. Easy way to remember that is 800-FFN-1921. You know, just talk to somebody that will answer the phones till right at midnight Eastern time with live people. You know, if we got lots of people on the call, I've just checked with the operator, measured in the hundreds actually. So you know, if lots of you take us up on the voice option, you know, we are not equipped to handle 400 calls at one time. So you might have to be patient with us. But online, there's not going to be any barrier to entry there. Once you're a member, or if you're already a member, you can go log into your intranet. Again, if you don't know how to log into your intranet, you go to GoFFN.com. It says member login at the top right. You do your login. If you've forgotten your password, you can either go back and check your emails. It was in the first one we ever sent you. Or there's a password reminder thing there you can click on, and it'll automatically initiate that. But once you're on your intranet page, you're going to go into FFN Resources right there at the top of the page and Forms and Agreements, and you're going to see us staring you right there in the page front. Tim is actually right now putting a link up on the home page. I'm looking at it now, and it's not quite there, so it should be in the next 5 to 10 minutes. So,
all right.
And that agreement, it's not up there just by itself. I mean, you know, we've got probably 75 to 100 different agreements up there. Most anything you're ever going to need, you know, in there.
All right, so the FFN, guys, is $199 a month, and it is the best bargain in real estate. However, you do not need any money to go subscribe to it right now. And if you don't want to stay at the end of the month, just tell Dennis, and you'll never be charged. But in the meantime, you get to steal all the good stuff, including this work for equity agreement, off of that site. Now, I want to caution you that there's two lease option agreements up there. One of them is for pretty houses that are in excellent condition and so leased. And the other one is clearly labeled a work for equity agreement. So make sure that you drag that one off. Now, this is very important on these work for equity deals, and I'll tell you why. If you're going to put somebody in a house and they're doing the work, that is contrary to most tenant-landlord arrangements. And if you don't have something in your agreement that says that a condition for them doing the work, the reason they're doing the work is because it is a condition of their option, then any judge is going to say, well, Mr. Landlord, you're responsible for those repairs. You didn't do them, so tenant wins. However, if the judge sees an agreement that says, no, Your Honor, he was responsible for those repairs, that's why I optioned him the house, that's why I put him in the house to begin with, then you're probably going to win. And I can tell you that from experience. I've only had one challenge on that work for equity agreement, and I won. But it's very important. And that's why it took so long for my attorney to create that agreement, because a lot of the terms that are in your pretty house ready to move into lease option agreement are contradictory to the work for equity term. So you got to be very careful with that language. You will also find attached to that agreement a down payment assistance addendum, which is where I get my work for equity tenant buyers to pay me extra money per month over and above their rent toward their down payment. In fact, I do that with the pretty house and the work for equity tenant buyers. And you really like that addendum, because it is just something that they fill out, and it clearly states how much more they're going to pay over and above the rent. It gives them a chance to miss 2 months a year without having a chance of voiding their option. And, by the way, if they do miss those extra monthly payments, it does not void their option, and you don't ever want to try to take action to put somebody out of a house because they didn't pay that extra payment. Only if they don't pay the rent can you move them out of the house. So, anyway, you're going to love those agreements. And, in fact, that agreement went through two different attorneys, and that's why it costs so much money to get it prepared for you. So it's the only one I've ever seen like it. So you're welcome. Use it. Drag it off of there. and let me move on here. What you do is you email that to your attorney and let your attorney close these deals, and your attorney will add anything they want. And I can promise you pretty soon that will become their work for equity lease options agreement that they'll be charging others for. All right, next rule is that you must expect. Now, these are kind of rules for you. You must expect that half or more of these folks are going to move out of these properties. Now, that really comes down to your selection process for putting them in to begin with. But let's face it, you're asking people that normally can't afford a house to move into your house, spend their money to buy materials to put into the house, and then actually have them clean up their credit along the way and get qualified for a loan. A lot can go wrong in that process. They can go out and they can buy something else and screw up their debt ratio, or they can lose interest, or they can get tired of the house, or on and on and on. That's why it's so important that you get a non-refundable option deposit from these people before you put them in the house. You got to expect to lose half or more of them, and then you go back out and do it all over again. So I don't want you to build a business that you're requiring that back-end cash out from those houses to sustain life. Because if you put yourself in that position, guess what happens? They don't close. If you put yourself in a position, well, I'm getting my cash up front, I'm getting it from money coming out of the loan, or I'm getting it from the deposits on the subject due deals, and I'm getting it from the other types of properties that I'm doing, since you're not going to do all work for equity, and, you know, I've got enough cash flow to sustain life, now you look at this back-end cash out as a bonus. And I can tell you your mindset is going to be a lot better if when that money comes, it's just a good day, not critical if it doesn't come. Because in my experience, anytime you put yourself in a position to where the money has to come because it's critical and you suffer pain if it doesn't, then it just doesn't show up. So don't let that happen to you. Next, you should never borrow the money on the property on a private loan and not set aside enough to fix the property. In my example, it cost $10,000 to do that renovation. Not a good idea for you to go borrow that $70,000 and go spend that $20,000. Remember, that property is not renovated yet, and if your tenant buyer doesn't do it, somewhere along the line, you may want to or be forced to. So I'm going to suggest that you take that $10,000 that you know is going to cost to renovate that house, and you put it in an escrow account outside of your account, an escrow account, leave it alone, set it aside until that tenant buyer has cashed you out. That is the smart, safe money management thing to do. Even though I know as I'm saying that, most people are not going to do it, that's what you should do. And now if you ever have to renovate that property, then fine, you've got the money and you don't become one of those motivated sellers and get yourself into a mess. So set aside
the
cash. Yeah.
Say that one more time. That's crucial. I see a lot of people spend money that wasn't theirs.
Well, I said if the house needs renovated and you're borrowing the money on it, you should set aside the money to renovate it, put it in an escrow account, and now when that tenant buyer cashes you out, not only do you get that $38,000 on the back end, but now you can go ahead and take that $10,000 out of escrow and really have a nice payday. That's all I've said. All right, and last, there's all kinds of variations you can do to this work for equity thing, such as I've got a plan where I can actually furnish that tenant buyer the money to buy those materials with. But that's going to be a long, drawn-out explanation that I'm probably not going to have time to do tonight. But the gist of it is that I will sometimes let them buy materials, and I'll furnish the money, but I will never, ever give them the money up front and hope they go buy materials with them. In other words, if they want to go buy the first round and bring me the receipts after they're installed in the house, then I might say, okay, I'll reimburse you for the first round. Now you go buy the second round until the job is done. I don't like doing that. I'd much rather they put their money into the materials. But, hey, if I can get, say, $5,000 deposit out of one of them and I'm breaking them and they got no money for the materials, then I might make that kind of deal with them. Because I've gotten more than I expected to get out of the deposit, so I don't have any problem doing it that way if I have to. Again, there's all kinds of variations.
Hey, Ron, let's be real clear. You are not writing them a check, giving them $100 bills, or anything else.
No.
to go over to Home Depot to buy supplies in hopes that they're going to put them on your property.
No, no way.
For disaster.
Absolutely not. And not only that, I'm not reimbursing anybody for any materials until they become part of that property. And I don't mean stored in the room either. I mean attached to it and installed. And then and only then will I write them a check back for the materials.
And I actually send somebody out there.
Oh, of course.
To visually inspect it, and I am not taking their word for it. I'm not taking a picture. It is going to be somebody that I trust, that I delegate to, that's going to go out there and do it.
You mean you don't? You can't. You mean are you saying you don't trust your tenant buyer?
Well,
to tell you the truth.
Well, what did you say earlier? How do I know that?
Okay, I got it. You know, anybody can throw some cabinets against the wall and take a picture. You don't know if they're installed or not.
Yep.
So, anyway. I was going to make another point here on, when you take a tenant buyer's money now for down payment, guys, you got to make sure that you separate it. I mean, you don't have to separate it in an account, but really it should show separately on your deposit slip as a down payment deposit. In other words, if they're paying you $600 a month rent and they're paying you extra for a down payment deposit, like, say, an extra couple hundred dollars a month, then your deposit slip should show $600 rent and $200 toward the down payment, because their lender is going to want to see proof that you received that money when you go qualify them for a loan. So in this repair game, let's say they're doing the work themselves and they spend $3,000 on materials. Well, I tell them right up front, you guys got to keep the receipts now. Make sure you keep the receipts, because your lender is going to want to see evidence that you spent that money on the property. So now when it comes time to buy the property, borrow the money on the property, and we're going to submit the loan to the lender, what I'll do is I'll take and rewrite the contract. For example, if it's a $115,000 sale and they've written, spent $3,000 on materials, then I'll write the contract for $118,000 and give them credit for the $3,000 down payment. And I'll, you know, I'll note right on there that's credit for materials that they put into the house, so that we're not doing anything that we shouldn't do. Then that the lender's fully aware that is what the money was spent on. And then, of course, I said that they're going to have to prove that they spent that money on the house, and that's perfectly acceptable even with FHA loans, for your information. So. And any additional down payment on top of that, of course, let's say they've given me the $2,000 deposit, in my example, plus $3,000 worth of materials, so I'll show it as a $5,000 down payment. So they only owe me if I wrote it up $118,000, now they owe me $113,000. Then I'll just turn over the back of the contract, say $2,000 of the down payment was in the form of a credit for materials that the buyer put into the house over the last several months. Proof attached. That makes sense?
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. Guys, I know you're going to have a million questions on this, and we're about to open it up, but let me just tell you, there's a couple of ways you can get them answered. Number one, I'll take a few here, and then number two, you can email them to Dennis. He just can't wait for you to flood him with these questions. And for you non-members, if you go join FFN, you'll have an instant email link to Dennis. And he also has every Tuesday he takes questions live on a Tuesday morning call. And then, like he said, I do it for you once a month on a Tuesday evening call for an hour and a half where it's just Q&A. You should also know that I'm doing a one-day seminar on this work for equity thing, one time only, in Jacksonville, Florida, on March the 20th. And if you want to come join me for that, if you're an FFN member, it's no charge to you. So if you're not a member, go to GoFFN and get registered. Do your 30-day trial. And fortunately for you, that's enough to get you into this Work for Equity seminar, and it won't be any cost. I'm going to give you a website here to go register for this Work for Equity seminar, if I have it, and I do. It's ronlegrand.com/WFE. Now, what would WFE stand for? I get it. Work for Equity. So it's ronlegrand.com/WFE. That'll get you registered for the one-day workshop. Again, no charge as a FFN member. And I'm also going to offer a live Internet feed. We've never done this before, Dennis. So if you can't make it to the live event, go to that website and register, because I don't know how to get on the live internet feed, and it'll probably tell you on the website, and if it don't, we're going to get back to you and let you know. So come join me live March 20th, and if you can't, maybe we can let you tune in live on the internet version. Okay?
So, Rob, this is a one-time thing, and it is in Jacksonville, right?
Yes, I'm taping it. And there will be a course available, but it'll be several months off, and obviously it won't be free like I'm offering the members here, or our listeners tonight. If you're listening to this call, you're eligible to get in for free. All right. One more time on that website, ronlegrand.com/WFE. Write that down. And if you missed that, just email Dennis, and he'll lead you to it. Okay, Candace, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. We have people in the queue.
Yes, we do. Are you ready for that first question?
I am.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, just as a reminder, if you do have a question or comment tonight, please press *0 on your phone. And our first question comes from Leo. Go ahead, Leo.
Hey, Ron. Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
I am good, Leo.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate
it.
I can't wait to see you up in Jacksonville. It's going to be really awesome. I'm looking forward to that. I'm already booked, and I'm ready to go.
All righty, man. Good. What's your question?
All right. This is my question. Are there any houses that are maybe too beaten up or have too many problems for this to work well with? For example, I'm buying a former marijuana drug house, and vandalized pretty good. I mean, they've even cut the underground power line out to the utilities. The electrical needs to all be redone.
Yep.
Is this a good house maybe for the strategy, or do you want to find
one? It's going to be tough, Leo. And here's the plan that I would implement on that one. First of all, you better sell it cheap. So I'm assuming you can buy it really cheap, correct?
Yes.
Okay, exactly. What do you think the ARV would be?
ARV is 130.
Okay, what do you think you can get it for?
I'm getting it for 65.
How many dollars do you think it needs for repairs?
Probably 20.
You're paying 20? Too much for it. You're paying too much for it, man. You're paying too much for it. You can get them a lot cheaper than that without all that, a lot of work. And I don't know. Let's say your $20,000 is right. If it's really worth $130 and does need $20,000 worth of work, and it's that kind of work. I mean, what you described doesn't sound too bad to me. The fact that that electrical line's cut that a row is not a big deal. That's an electrician and, you know, probably an hour's worth of work. So I don't know what else is wrong with it that turns you off so bad. What is it?
Well, it's a new house. It's a 2004.
That's good.
2006, right? 2006. Yeah, I've been using your Mayo formula and all these, and they've all been working out for me. But, you know, I think that was 70% Mayo.
Well, answer my question. Hello? Well, we don't pay anywhere near Mayo today, Leo. You better get back and get in the system, man. We buy them a lot cheaper than that. Mayo is just a formula. Notice that I trained you to never pay Mayo.
Right, yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
Well, today we don't come anywhere close to Mayo. In fact, it's not uncommon at all to buy them for half of Mayo.
Well, it's been working for me, Ron. And
all right, well, then answer my question. What turns you off about the house so much?
It needs a lot of work. It's a big house. It's like almost 2,200 square feet. And it's got some major electrical problems. There's no AC.
You just described to me sounds like about a 98.5 sale or something like that, Leo. Give them plenty of equity in it, and you'll find somebody. But you better have a plan, too, in case you don't.
Right.
All right. I don't like – I'm telling you, I don't like how much you're paying for it. I think you're paying too much for it. Of course, I can see you're not going to listen. So if you're going to buy this property and you're going to pay $65,000 for it, you should be borrowing enough to make sure you get it fixed. So you need to borrow about $90,000 on that house, and I think you're pushing the loan-to-value ratio too high.
Right. Well, I thought that still left a 30% equity cushion.
I don't know. That's not enough, sir. That's the last time I'm going to say it. That's not enough. Not in this market.
All right.
Okay,
thanks, Ron.
Next question, Candace.
Okay, next question comes from Lauren. Go ahead, Lauren.
Hey, Ron. Thanks for this seminar or this web telephone, whatever. I have a question. When you when you say they must pay rent and yes. enough to cover cost of taxes and insurance.
And interest.
And interest.
Yes.
What do you think of them carrying, them paying the taxes and them paying their own insurance?
Not a chance. First of all, they don't own the house, so they can't insure it.
Okay.
Second of all, if you think somebody's going to pay taxes, besides, who are they going to pay it to? They're not due for a year, you know. You got to collect the taxes.
Right.
So really, you're just collecting the rent, knowing you're going to wind up paying the taxes later.
All right, you answered my question. Thanks.
Remember, these are tenants.
Right.
You got to train them every month or two.
Right.
And you're just expecting too much there. So make it easy for them. That's all you need to do.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Hey, folks, before Candace puts the next caller in, I don't know how many callers we have that have questions, but if we have time and you'd like to get in the queue, you can hit your *0 button. That'll place you into the queue, and Candace will insert you into the call in the order in which you called in. We've got about 12 minutes left, Ron.
All right. Go ahead, Candace.
Okay, next question comes from Teresa. Go ahead, Teresa.
Hello, Ron.
Hello, Teresa.
I enjoyed your seminar very much.
Thank you.
Yes. I have a question. When you have a tenant buyer, and you said you were building up their credit, but if they're making payments to you, then how does that build up their credit?
Well, you're not building up their credit. Remember I said we were probably going to get a credit report, a credit cleaning agency to clean their credit while they're doing the work in the house and living in it and paying the
okay.
rent, which takes months, which is one of the biggest reasons that this thing, that the closing drags out, which actually turns out to be an advantage to you tax-wise.
Okay, so then if they make their payments on time, of course, it doesn't go to the credit.
Well,
bureau.
No, remember that the lender is still going to ask for a verification of their rent, how they paid their rent, and you're going to report that they made it on time. And in today's marketplace, you can expect the lender to ask you to prove that. Show me when that money was deposited in your bank account. Prove to me that they made their payment on time.
Okay, so you can keep...
In that regard, you're helping them with their credit, but you're not really helping them their credit report any other than sicking the credit agency on them.
So would you actually pay for the credit repair company to do their repair?
I might if I got enough deposit out of them up front. And if I did, I'd probably make them pay it back over a few months. If it cost me $500 to get their credit cleaned up, fine. Add $100 a month to your rent to give me my money back.
And you would let them know that you're doing that, of course?
Sure.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Try to get them to pay it up front. If they can't, I'll pay it. If I'm hell-bent on getting them cashed out. If I'm not, I don't care.
Okay, good enough. Thanks a lot.
Next question.
All right, next question comes from Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
Wow. Hi, Ron. How are you?
I am good, Mark.
Oh, thank you for your time. Ron, everything is relative here, I suppose, but the last webinar that you had, it was 11 reasons.
Yes, sir.
And, now I'm starting to get tongue-tied.
So how many of those 11 applied to you, Mark?
just about
for our listeners, that was 11 reasons why people don't succeed.
Yeah, well, they were very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, now I gotta think of the question again. I wanna get started, but yes. Now you do realize that a lot of your students are not online. And I have a very old computer. Now, at the end of that webinar, you had some free gifts for people to download.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was not able to download. Is there any way I can acquire them? Because I will be starting up in
Mark, I don't know. I don't even remember what I was giving away. But I'll tell you right now, I'll give everybody on the call a phone number to go order some free stuff.
Yes.
And you're talking to a voicemail system. You're not going to be talking to a human being. You want that?
Yes, sir.
All right, here, write it down. 800 670-2209. 800-670-2209.
2209.
Okay. And it's one of those interactive voicemails like you get when you call a bank, you know, okay, give me your name, give me your phone number, okay, boom, boom, boom. And the next thing you know, you're getting I'm giving you a free CD and a report on foreclosures and how to make money in foreclosure market today.
Thank you so much, Ryan. It was really exciting to talk to you, and I hope to meet you someday. Maybe we can partner up on some million-dollar deals down the road.
Never know.
Oh, that's really exciting. Thank you so much for your time, Ryan.
You're welcome. Candace?
Okay, next call comes from Don. Go ahead, Don.
Hello, Don. It's Ron LeGrand. It's Don Candace. How are you doing, Ron?
I am good.
I'm the collection agent you met in California. I worked with Swiss Rockhauer for a while and then went on my own.
How about that?
How you doing, man?
I'm good.
Good. I did make $400,000, man, with your program.
All right. Then did you send me a letter?
I have not done that yet, but I did have to spend
Stop. So you're telling me you made $400,000 doing what I taught you to do and you haven't sent me a letter yet?
I told you about it, though.
How does that make you feel? You haven't sent me a letter yet.
I know. I'm really bad at that. The reason why, one of the reasons why the letter didn't go out, most of the money had to be spent on my mother, who had cancer, and thank God I did save her life.
Well, very good, man.
Yeah, she is now cancer free.
I'd love a letter to that effect.
No, that's where the money went, and also I did some things for my sister who was in desperate need. Now I'm in Tucson, Arizona. I have 3,000 foreclosure listings on my desk. I'm building my credibility kit. I'm trying to work smarter now, not hard, because I did it the old-fashioned way before. Mm-hmm. My question to you is now, two, I need a buyer's list.
Uh-huh.
And the second thing is I'm going through this stuff, these foreclosures, and a lot of these people have more than one loan on it, and the equity is spread is not very good when you look at the ARV.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm trying to do now is come up with a strategy that will allow me to not pass up on some of these properties. So do you feel that the lease option technique is good when a person has more than one loan on the property, even if the equity spread is not that large? Because I remember back in my training back in the day, just a few years ago, you told me that most people that I can charge maybe 10, maybe 20% above the ARV and possibly get it to create this lease option. Not anymore.
No. That was a different world back then, and that's what scares me when you guys talk about stuff we were doing 2 years ago.
Okay.
We're on a different planet now.
Okay.
All right, and you're not going to get anybody. You're going to be lucky to get ARV today.
Okay.
Much less 10% above ARV.
Okay.
Even on a lease option. These people are not stupid out there. They have the Internet is in front of them. They can do all the kind of research that they can find anything they need to know about these houses.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that it's bargain time. Now, of course, when you're lease optioning to somebody, they're not nearly as bargain conscious as they are, but just the same, you should be lucky to get ARV and not trying to get greedy here.
Okay. One of the strategies I'm using is I'm trying to deal with foreclosures where the property was purchased in 2004, 2005, 2006, because that will have a better equity spread than someone who just bought the property recently. What do you think?
You mean you're trying to get them pre-foreclosure?
Yes, pre-foreclosure. Yes, I'm working with the seller directly like you taught me.
Well, I think that's probably a good strategy if they haven't refinanced it since then.
Okay. All right. Great. Now, the properties who have more than one loan on, I should just bypass those?
No.
Okay.
Well, that depends. See, the ones who have two loans on them,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes into default,
mm-hmm.
the big money is made in discounting the second mortgage down to 10 cents on the dollar, which is normal. So, I'd much rather have the loans in default with two loans on them than I would with one loan.
Okay.
If they're not in default, I'd much rather have them with one loan on them. So, see, that's a hard question to answer.
Right. Okay. Well, how would I go by doing the discount? Would I talk to the lender directly or do that?
On a second mortgage?
Yeah.
Yeah. You just tell them that you got a contract to buy the house and here's what you'll pay and wait for their answer. And sometimes you get it right away. Sometimes you don't. But if it's in foreclosure, the closer it gets to the foreclosure sale, the better chances you're going to have of getting that discount. And frankly, discounting seconds down to a dime on the dollar is easy.
Hold on for a second, Ryan.
You have to have patience.
Hold on for a second, Ryan. Are you telling me I don't have to pass up on any of these deals on my desk? I can actually be a collection agent. I can find anyone in the world.
I don't know what's on your desk, so I can't say yes.
No, they're all pre-foreclosure. I'm working with a real estate agent, and I'm working with a person with a title rep who emails me all this stuff. And I've got all these listings now on my desk. It took me 8 months to build here, and get my name going. So now I'm working Tucson, Arizona, and I'm working California stuff too.
All right. Well, see, here's the problem. You got to be able to quickly, in seconds, determine whether you got a suspect or a prospect, and that's part of the training, man.
Exactly. I remember that. Okay.
So, but let's say you got a deal on your desk that's worth $150,000, and they owe $142,000 on it, and it's one mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want it.
No, not that one. No.
See, you don't want them. So everything on your desk is not a deal. That is, if they're in default, you don't want it.
Okay. But if the house is, let's say if we're talking about a $200,000 house, they got a second, they got a first on the property for like 115. Let's say they got an equity line of credit on the property for like maybe 30. Uh-huh. That's not a bad one.
Oh, that's a great one.
That's a great one.
Are they
okay.
in default?
They're in default on the first.
That ought to make your heart go pity-patter.
Okay. Okay. Because I got this stuff sitting right in front of me right now that speaks to you.
You got a fortune there.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Let's let somebody else on this call here. Candace, we got one more question there?
I'm going to send that letter, too.
All right, man.
All right. Thanks, Ron.
You're welcome.
All right. Our next question comes from Dennis. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hey, Ron. Dennis in Chicago.
Hi, Dennis. Shoot.
Quick question. On that example you did, you said you paid 15% on $67,000 if you held it for 1 year. Wouldn't it be true that you actually didn't pay it on $67,000, you only paid it on $47,000? Because isn't the $20,000 a loan?
Not when I sell it, it isn't. Not when I cash out of it. I got to pay tax on it.
Okay, okay. And second question is, I got a deal right now. It's a two-bed, one-bath. The ARV is 68. Talking to the seller, he's motivated because he's 2 hours away now, and it was a rental property. It's free and clear, and we started off with an offer at I'd pay him 45, zero down, no payments, all due in 7 years. He didn't like that. He wanted around 60, and we went to we're now at 50,000. I'll give him 10 down and the rest two in 10 years. And he's definitely considering it.
With no payments?
With no payments.
Okay. Where are you going to get the 10?
I'm going to borrow 20 from a private lender.
Then you're going to give him a second mortgage for the balance.
Correct.
Well,
I'm going to subordinate.
Does he know
sure.
this? Does he know this?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then if he knows this, fine. You're in great shape.
Okay. So now, would you do...
You're going to borrow 20 on a first and... give him a 42nd.
Correct.
Yeah, well, that'll work, especially if you got no payments on his deal for 10 years.
Right.
That's a
now, it's just obviously to him it's a pain in the neck because the property does need repair. It needs about $5,000 in work.
Okay.
It's a two-bed, one-bath. I'm thinking about doing a work-for-equity program.
Perfect. So it's a perfect work-for-equity deal. Go ahead and borrow your 20.
Uh-huh.
Put somebody else in it for 60 if you say it's worth 68.
Right.
Let them do the work. You got plenty of time to get them cashed out and get them financed.
Okay. And let's say that
And then, by the way, when you get ready to pay him off on that 40, you're going to discount the heck out of him because you're going to be paying him off about 9 years early.
Correct. Now, if I get some people that can't make the commitment or can't get it done in that amount of time, I just keep collecting rent for the next 10 years, and then
you put the next tenant buyer in there.
Okay.
Tell someone one of them does get it done.
Would you consider your
cash flow is going to be so great on that because you're only servicing a $20,000 debt, and that's assuming you're making payments on it.
Right. I think at 10% or 11%, the guy that I'm working with is only about $183 a month. The other exit that I have is if I am going to get such a long term on it, why not sell it with owner financing and just keep collecting on it and balloon them in 9 years. It's Illinois.
No. Don't want to do that in Illinois because you're not going to get a big enough down payment to make you want to sell it with owner financing on that price range house and not have to worry about taking it back because I think you've got a pretty lengthy foreclosure process in Illinois.
Right.
So it's a lease option. Sorry.
Lease option. That's fine.
All right.
What I remember, the rental market in that area is $800 a month.
I don't know what the rental market is in that area, but remember, this is a work for equity, so you got to take a little less. All right, Dennis Quattlebaum, you there?
I am here.
Do we move on a little bit, or do we quit now? What do you tell me? I'll take a couple more questions if you want to.
Well, we're 2 minutes after, and we're going to have to get this thing on a 71-minute CD. How about, Candace, do we got one more question, or are you feeling benevolent, Ron?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one more question in the queue.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, next question comes from Melody. Go ahead, Melody.
Hello?
Hey, Melody.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm still trying to understand the whole work for equity. So these people, they're not really owning the house. They just think they're owning the house?
No, they don't think they're owning it, and they know they're leasing it with the option to buy. Couldn't be more clear.
Okay, and if you have a house that you know, and you know they're already in there, and they have a lease option to buy, and then the guest house has like some serious work that needs to be done, do you just put on agreement as is, like so if the thing ever falls down, that you're not hold reliable for anything?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. First of all, whatever I put on the agreement doesn't mean I'm not liable. And second, you can't just write as is. You need to have an attorney involved in that deal and do the proper agreement. That's what I did on this one. You don't just pull out an agreement out of the drawer and put as is on it and hope everything's going to work out okay. The answer to your question is you get an attorney to do that if you're worried about liability. Of course, if you don't own in your own name, that helps, and you shouldn't.
And now this was one of my first houses that I bought. How can I actually take that house out of my name? Should I, like, sell it to the corporation, or should
put it into a land trust.
Put into a land trust. And how do I do that?
We're not going to have time on this call for that.
Okay, okay.
No, you're going to have to email Dennis that question. And, Dennis, do you have a land trust agreement on the website?
Gosh, Ron, I'm going to have to look.
A land trust deed?
Yeah, a land trust deed, I'm fairly certain we do. I don't think we have a
What state are you in?
New Mexico.
Okay. Check with Dennis tomorrow and see if he's got a land trust deed. But if he doesn't, you can go to a title company or attorney and get one. It means that deed's got to be filled out and recorded to a land trust, and it's done. But you really need to know what you're doing and why before you go messing around with deeds. So I hesitate to tell you to do that with that limited explanation.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, guys, if we didn't get your questions in, I'm sorry we ran out of time. Go ahead and email them to Dennis tomorrow. And I want to point out something about Dennis right now. He's at a seminar today that he paid $3,000 to be at, in case you guys don't think us gurus actually attend seminars. And we pay a lot of money to be at them. So Dennis is a good example of that, continuing education. And I myself attend several of those a year. So I hope the call was informational for you tonight. Get him your questions. If you didn't get them answered, get to that website that I gave you. If you want to get to that one-day seminar here in Jax, that's ronlegrand.com/WFE. It's free to everybody on the call. And so if I don't see you on March the 20th, maybe I'll catch you on that live feed. Get subscribed to FFN right now, quickly. GoFFN.com. Best bargain in real estate. And the call we did tonight is just one example of all of the tools that we have available for you. So with that said, Dennis, anything else before we get off this call?
Well, I don't remember if we told them we were going to give them a 30-day free trial of FFN or not if they go up there. So,
yeah.
Guys, it's,
no risk, guys. No risk.
No risk there.
Just do it. And if you don't like it, you can quit as fast as you got in. So.
The other thing is you mentioned emailing. Guys, my staff is going to hate me and Ron, especially since I'm going to be traveling a large portion of the day tomorrow. So give us a couple of days to get those answered. You know, my staff can handle most of that stuff, but it's an unusually tricky question. They're going to want to defer to me. And know I'll be traveling lots and lots tomorrow, be home late tomorrow evening. But that email address is going to be support@goffn.com. Again, support@goffn.com. And we'll get those turned around as quickly as we can.
And for all of you members and non-members, you should know that your article in this month's newsletter that's coming out in March, will be on Work for Equity. And so I just got that to Tim Yandel today to get that published. So just so you'll know that that's on its way. So look out for your next edition.
Are you telling me you beat the deadline by a full day?
I beat the deadline, man. I beat the deadline. Article's coming.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for your business. Thanks for tuning in. If there's anything we can do for you, you let us know, and we'll see what we can do.
Good night, everybody.
All right. Good night, Ron.